Welcome to a Prevent Connect podcast, where we explore the prevention of violence against women. This is a project of the California Coalition Against Sexual Assault.
Hi, this is Ashley with Prevent Connect, and today I have two guests. First, I have Morgan Curtis, who is the Director of Prevention Programs at the Texas Association Against Sexual Assault. Hi, Morgan. How are you doing?
I'm pretty good. How about yourself?
Good. Thank you. I also have Abby Sims, who's with CalCASA, the California Coalition Against Sexual Assault. Hi, Abby. How are you?
Hi, Ashley. I'm well.
Well, great. So today is a follow-up from the National Sexual Assault Conference that took place August 28th through 30th in Hollywood, California. Morgan did a session, and Abby got a chance to attend, and the session was called Activity-Based Evaluation, Building Evaluation into Prevention Curricula. So, Morgan, can you start by telling us a little bit about the session and what you talked about?
Sure. The session was about this model of building evaluation into what people are already doing. In this instance, specifically focused on education-based prevention work, looking at where there are already points where you can collect data in your curriculum using role plays or written tools or any other opportunity for observation to gauge how successful you're being in your education efforts. So we know that funders are requiring some kind of evaluation from folks right now, and that a lot of times the evaluations that people are doing for their funders aren't meaningful for that same person's practice. So maybe they're collecting data through a pre- and post-test, and they're funneling those numbers off to a funder. Even if they spend some time looking at those numbers, they're often not really useful to knowing how you could do your work differently or how you can improve as a facilitator or a trainer or an educator. This model is about finding those points throughout a 12 or 6-week curriculum where you can use what people are doing in front of you evaluatively. And it walks through kind of the process for looking at that, how do you identify what a good evaluation activity would be, how do you identify what success will look like, and then how do you build a really simple tool, some sort of rubric, for assessing whether or not learning has happened the way that you intended for it to happen. And then looking at, okay, then now that I have these data, what can I do differently, you know, in the future with this same group that I'm working with to improve their learning? Like, if I see that they didn't learn what I needed them to learn, then maybe I need to go back and give them a refresher before I move forward. And then you can also look at your curriculum overall, so that the next time you facilitate that same curriculum, maybe you know you need to teach it a little bit differently or facilitate an activity a little bit differently or change it altogether if it's not working. That's kind of a general overview.
Well, that sounds really great. And I know Abby Sims here with CalCASA was really impressed with your training. Abby, what were some of your thoughts about the training?
I was so excited to be in the training. And one of the things I kind of thought about when I was sitting there was having had the experience of doing community-based prevention for a long part of my career, how sometimes it can feel like you're just kind of throwing spaghetti up against the wall and you don't even know what's sticking. Like, you are kind of having these conversations and these workshops and working from a curriculum, but you don't really know until, as Morgan said, like the end of the year, you know, 6 months or a year later, what those outcomes are, but you don't know what is actually happening in the room. And this was seemed like such a good way, in addition to doing the assessment, but to really give people who are working in prevention some vision of success so that they can feel, so that they can be more sustainable and feel like they have control over what they're doing and how they're doing the work. So how are people using this kind of evaluation to be meaningful to them and their program?
You know, we've just kind of started piloting this in Texas, and not a lot of folks are using it yet, but our hope is exactly what you've talked about. I mean, I know since thinking about this, I've started using this in trainings that I do, and it's an incredibly effective way for me to see what points are sticking and what points are not sticking. So even thinking about the way that this training has evolved over the last, I think, year and a half since my colleague at the Texas Council on Family Violence and I started doing it, we include an activity-based assessment in the training, and we're able to really clearly see what points people aren't getting. Like, for a long time, for the first several times we did this, people weren't really understanding, I think, and I think I discussed this in the training, the importance of making sure you're paying attention to the verb and a learning objective, because that's what you want to measure. If your verb is that people need to be able to identify something, you want to measure their ability to identify it. If it's that you want them to demonstrate something, you need to measure their ability to demonstrate it. You know, now in that training, I spend more time focused on that point, and it seems to have made a difference. When I score the assessments now at the end of this training, people seem to be getting that. There's not as much confusion around that. And I think that this is one of those ways where you can see almost in real time what kind of impact you're having. So if I knew that I was doing a 6-session introduction to this model, because certainly it could be broken out into many sessions, I could see at the end of the first day, like, people didn't get that, and I can build on that tomorrow. Tomorrow, maybe in the next session, I need to go ahead and revisit this idea of, like, looking at the verb in your learning objective and really make sure that people understand that so that I can build on that learning, so that I don't get to the end of 6 sessions of trying to teach this model again and see, okay, wow, my post-test scores are not at all what I expected them to be, and it looks like everybody missed that piece on learning objectives, and that was in the beginning, and I tried to build on that for the whole rest of the 6 sessions without realizing they didn't get it. And I think the other really important piece about this model that is helpful for practice is the way that once you start thinking that way, you're able to then see things evaluatively more frequently. Like, you train your mind to be able to do that even when you don't have a rubric in front of you. As a facilitator, to know, to listen for particular things that you have identified as what you want to hear that will show that, you know, the change you're hoping to make has been made, or you can change your facilitation strategy in the moment to try and really help people get where you're trying to go, so that you're always kind of outcomes driven.
I think that the aspect of course correction, especially if you do have 6 or 10 sessions with a group, it seems like such a missed opportunity to not check in and see if people really did get whatever you were meaning to impart to them, if they really have an understanding of that, especially since you have 5 more hours that you can correct that pretty easily. To not be able to have the information to do that is sad.
Right.
It's not. It's just so helpful to know in the room during implementation where the gaps are and to be able to change the way you do implementation to address those without waiting exactly till post-test. And at that point, you don't even know where the disconnect was necessarily.
Right.
You just know
right.
what was learned.
And if you think about this in terms of, you know, larger evaluation, in terms of, like, measuring your short, mid, and long-term outcomes, if you can't make those course corrections in the moment in fairly real time, then you're inhibiting your ability to meet your short-term outcomes, and you're throwing off your entire ability to make the long-term change that you're looking to make by not understanding, like, not figuring out a way to look at the data that's in front of you. So if you don't realize until the end of a 12-week curriculum that the learning that you were trying to impart didn't happen, well, then you've missed an opportunity. You know, then you've got to go back and completely redo things, or you've got to rethink about the logic in your logic model, whereas this allows you to just kind of have that daily effort toward the progress that you're trying to make and to see if you're getting there, to look at it as kind of benchmarking for your short-term outcome.
What I really appreciated also about your presentation was the transparency of it, and I was wondering how integrated into your presentation there was some micro-evaluation in there, and I was wondering the process that you came up with to plan the training that way.
Yes, you know, this training was the result of probably 6 months of conversations with my colleague, Sudhavi Kuke, at the Texas Council on Family Violence. So we have 2 coalitions here, and she's got a ton of evaluation experience, and we were thinking about, you know, the very things that we've been talking about as being problematic around the way most people are doing evaluation. We were kind of thinking about this on 2 tracks, both for how we evaluate our own work, which is often education-based as well, training and technical assistance, and then how do we help folks on the field do meaningful evaluation work. And we built this training and came up with that improvement loop and had somebody, you know, kind of mock up the loop for us. I think we did the training the first time actually without including an actual activity-based assessment component. And then we did that thing where afterward you're like, wow, we're totally not practicing what we're teaching right now. We had an application component, and I think we did it through a webinar the first time, and then it was one of those light bulb moments as we were debriefing the training where it was like, oh, we had data in front of us that, you know, we could have shown them exactly what we were talking about while we had them do an activity. And so we just went through the process of, okay, well, let's think this through. We already have learning objectives, so we've got everything else in place. And then we developed fairly substantive rubric to look at all of the different components of what were being applied for our learning objectives. And this is actually the first time that I've gone the extra step of sharing some of that rubric that we develop. Because again, it's one of those things that over time you start to realize, oh, there are so many more places I can be transparent after they've done this activity and after I've gathered those data, like, let me show them. You know, because this is a, you know, we're using a scale, which is one of the more complex possibilities for the scoring tool that you create. And let's show that 4-point scale and kind of what we talked about, the general language that we use about what makes something really good versus not quite meeting the mark. And we're, you know, we're both people who really believe in engaging in as much transparency as possible when you're trying to teach skills and trying to apply them in front of people so that you're teaching and modeling at the same time. And for us, it was really just a process of figuring out how to do that and how to do that in a meaningful way. You know, I think we're still kind of trying to find it because it's a little bit different when you're doing one presentation as opposed to 6 weeks where I might do this twice or three times or three times over 12 weeks. But I think it's really one of the more powerful ways to teach people. It's like, okay, let's get you applying this model, and then I'm going to show you like how I'm now applying the analysis or applying the observation to what you're doing so that people have a real-world example. Because, I mean, even building out the case study throughout the training, this is the first time we've done that because we realized by the time you get to the end and try to build that out, people are already a little bit lost. But if you can build out that full case all the way through, then people are ready for looking at that scoring tool when you get there. We used to have people try to help, like, build in real time, as an example, a live example of the scoring tool for the case study that's built throughout the training, and that didn't seem to be very effective because they hadn't seen it yet. So, okay, well, let's show an example, talk about why it was developed this way, and then you can go and apply all of these things at once.
And Morgan, for our audience, can you give one or two examples of activity-based evaluation?
Yes. Of course. One of, I think, the easiest and probably the most prevalent opportunities is role plays. The way that we talk about it in this model is you have learning activities and you have application activities, and they're not necessarily mutually exclusive, but learning activities are kind of whatever you would do to teach a skill or a concept or an idea or begin to impart an attitude change. And then the application activity is, as you might think, how they're going to apply that, because we know in good educational practice to have people apply especially new skills but new knowledge as well in order to really solidify their learning. So often, like if you think about bystander behaviors, for example, you'll have a lecture or a demonstration or a video where people will learn different bystander behaviors, different opportunities for bystanding, or maybe a facilitated conversation around those different bystander skills, when it's safe to use them, when it's not safe to use them, which ones people feel comfortable doing or not, and then you have them apply that by doing a role play. So that role play is an opportunity then for activity-based assessment. So you might build out some sort of rubric of the kinds of behaviors you want to see demonstrated based on what you taught them. You know, you want to see that they're intervening at the right point. You want to see that they're intervening in a safe way. You know, you'll build, maybe you just build a simple checklist, like you want to see the following things done, and then you watch the role plays and make tick marks on the things that they did that you wanted to see, and, you know, then you can add that up, like what percentage of students did what percentage of the skills that you taught them. So that's one example. Then another example that is included in the workshop itself is looking at communication styles. Again, this is looking at the verb in a learning objective, is that you want to know that people can identify different styles of communication. In the example, it's passive, passive-aggressive, aggressive, and assertive. You might teach them about those, again, during a lecture, or have a pre-planned role play that they watch and you explain the communication styles as they're watching it. And then the application activity, you want some way to assess whether or not they can identify those communication styles. So you may then show them, again, another role play, and you could have them either write down, like, which role play is which communication style, or you can have them shout it out or hold up a sign, and so you want to see that they can identify those communication styles appropriately. So it can be that simple as just how many of them got it right. So you have a sheet where you just mark down, like, how many students did that effectively, they were able to identify.
Ooh, great. I like those because they sound very doable, which is something we need more of in evaluation.
Right. And it may seem like a lot for a facilitator to do, but if you have somebody else in the classroom who can even do that for you, like just make those check marks if you can't. But even so, it's a really simple thing, and it's not adding too much of an extra step when you have to develop the rubric ahead of time. But as the educator or facilitator in the room, you're already going to be watching. It's not adding a whole lot extra to someone's plate.
And it may even help you think it through so you have considered what your goal is in that moment.
Right. And that's, I think, one of those key pieces about the way evaluative thinking can impact practice. Because we aren't often trained to think about ourselves as educators or facilitators who are really outcomes driven for a lot of reasons. But, you know, thinking all of this through helps you to approach your facilitation and your education in that way where you know where you're trying to go. Because we all have experienced those times when you're facilitating a conversation or a learning moment and you get way derailed into something that still seems really interesting and you let it happen because it's still a good point of learning. But then the issue becomes, okay, how do you redirect that or how do you still get to what you're trying to get to? And if you can think that way as you're facilitating discussions, it becomes a lot easier.
Thank you so much. That was kind of my final question. You talked in your presentation about thinking like an evaluator, which I think is so helpful, knowing that you don't have to be an evaluator, but you can start to think in that way. And I wanted to know if you had what that meant to you and if you had any tips for people who are kind of thinking about how to think about being an evaluator.
Yeah, so I mean, I think it's a couple of really simple things. One is always knowing where you're trying to go, always having a sense of a roadmap, even if you don't make a logic model for every day of your existence or every session, so you always are thinking about what success is going to look like. So that is one of the number one things about thinking like an evaluator. And then you're also thinking about, well, where do you have access to data to see if you're successful or not? And again, you can record that on a piece of paper or not. Like, do this activity-based assessment, that's one way, but also just beginning to see where you have data that you can just analyze on the spot where you can see, like, am I getting towards success or am I not getting towards success, and what do I need to do differently in my practice then to get me there? You know, there are a lot of complicated things about evaluation, but those are the most simple things about thinking evaluatively. What is success? How will I know if I've gotten there? And then what am I going to do with those data points once I have them? So having already a mechanism in place. So maybe it's about, as a facilitator, keeping really good facilitation notes or being really diligent about that so that you have a way to track kind of the process along with the outcomes and you can always go back and look at things that you need to shift. So, yeah, I think those are the really key components.
Well, Abby and I have been nodding our heads vigorously with everything that you said, Morgan, for we will be continuing these conversations on Prevent Connect. So we look forward to talking to you more about evaluation. Thank you, Abby, and thank you, Morgan.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this Prevent Connect podcast. Prevent Connect is a project of the California Coalition Against Sexual Assault, with funding from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. The views presented on Prevent Connect are not necessarily the views of the United States government, the CDC, or CalCASA. To learn more about Prevent Connect, visit www.preventconnect.org. For more information about CalCASA's mission or to show your support, visit calcasa.org. That's CALCASA.org.